unfounded accusations. You can deny all you want, Senator. Sawyer's wannabe operators sang like canaries. You can come back with me, or you can die here and end up a part of island lore. Thwaite's mouth opened agape, looking to Sawyer for help. The former Army Ranger took a drawn-out puff of his Cohiba, weighing his options. When the opportunity arose, he'd go for his Glock and do what his underlings had proven incapable of. He would kill James Reese.
Create your opportunity.
I think we will stay right here, Commander, Sawyer said, buying time. The American public will soon forget any good you may have done. They will be much more concerned that a president has a lone wolf assassin running around in violation of international law and our very own Bill of Rights. Just create the space you need to go for the Glock. Action is faster than reaction. You've got this. That's a distinct possibility, Sawyer, and something we can't control. What you can control is how this night ends. My lawyers will have me out of this as soon as I set foot on U.S. soil. It's best for you to let this lie. No good can come from it. That's where you're wrong, Sawyer. Something will come from it. Oh, yeah? And what's that?
Sawyer asked, shifting his weight to give him better access to the modified pistol in his waistband.
Justice, Reese said.
Three shots tore through the night air in rapid succession, but they didn't come from Reese's gun. The first two rounds missed completely, sailing off into the night. The third caught Sawyer just below the heart, his body contorting around the wound. His hands fumbled at his shirt as he grabbed for something in the front of his pants. Reese spun back to the senator and went to a knee to change his elevation in time to see Thwaite fire another round from a shiny silver small-framed revolver. The fourth round entered Sawyer's forehead, taking most of his skull with it, a large chunk of gray brain matter catching on the wicker seat back. His head dropped to his chest and his lifeless body fell forward in his chair. Reese slowly stood, his weapon trained on the senator, who still had his pistol pointed at the man who had so tormented and ultimately failed him. Depending on the model, Reese knew it still had one or two live rounds in the cylinder.
Senator, you have one chance to put that down.
Unable to take his eyes off his psychological tormentor, Thwaite slowly moved the Smith & Wesson revolver to his lap.
It's over,
he whispered.
It's over, Reese repeated, his finger taking up slack on the trigger.
You know,
Thwaite said, a knowing smile slowly forming on his lips as he turned his head to Reese.
You won't live through the year.
To Reese's inquisitive look, he continued,
I just killed the one person on Earth who can call off a hit on you.
The senator's smile broadened. Then he brought the revolver to the side of his head, closed his eyes, and blew his brains across the veranda. Chapter 75. Catoctin Mountain Park, Maryland.
I give us a 1 in 10 chance of making it alive, Katie teased.
It was the inaugural voyage of the 1985 Jeep Grand Wagoneer that had once belonged to Reese's father. It was finally up and running, the 5.9-liter V8 delivering a whopping 140 horsepower. Katie couldn't help but give Reese a hard time about his classic as the heavy 4x4 lumbered up Route 15 toward Thurmont.
Oh, come on, Reese replied. 60% of the time it works every time.
Katie rolled her eyes at the old movie line. I even got the back window to roll up, he said proudly.
Correction, an army of mechanics attempted to fix the back window, but now it's stuck in the up position.
You see, progress. They turned onto Rocky Ridge Road and crossed over Big Hunting Creek.
This is where she really excels, Reese kidded, stepping on the gas.
Yeah, this beast corners like it's on rails.
Nice 80s reference, I'm impressed, Reese said. Katie turned to the man she loved.
Thank you, James.
Thank me for what?
Without you, without Haley, this,
she said, gesturing outside.
This doesn't exist. We'd be driving through a different country.
Haley put it together.
Rumor has it the president wants to honor her with the Presidential Medal of Freedom and the SecDef Medal for Valor. Of course, it would remain classified. When I talk with her, she gives you all the credit. I think she's being intentionally vague on a few details. Maybe that's best, Reese said.
Maybe,
Katie granted.
And Katie, try to go easy on him. What do you take me for, Mr. Reese? You think just because this is an exclusive interview at Camp David and that you refer to him the way you would someone you play softball with, that I'm going to give him layups?
I think you are mixing your sports metaphors. I don't even play bowling.
You know what I mean, Mr. Reese.
I know what you mean. Do your interview. Then we'll shoot some skeet and have dinner.
You say that like it's normal.
Katie, I don't know what normal is. Katie tried to hide her fading smile as Reese turned onto Park Central Road and began to wind his way through the white oaks, poplars, maples, birch, and eastern hemlocks toward the presidential retreat. Chapter 76. Camp David, Aspen Cabin. Reese took his offered seat on the small couch in Aspen Cabin. Following Katie's interview, the three had shot skeet and had dinner at Laurel Lodge. Katie had retired to Hawthorne Cabin to go over her notes from the interview and to give Reese and the president some time alone.
I thought you were going to touch the place up, Reese said as the president set a whiskey in front of his guest and took a seat in the chair across the coffee table. I've decided against it. I've grown to like it as it is. Simple. Peaceful. Camp David isn't mine. I'm just a guest. This is the presidential retreat, and I'm only here for a term. Maybe two.
Looks like two from what I see, Reese said, raising his drink to touch glasses with the president.
We'll see. If the people trust me with another 4 years after what we've just been through, I owe it to them.
How did it go with Katie?
Ms. Baranek is quite the journalist. She hit me hard on the revamped plans for eradication in the event of another naturally occurring virus. She is tenacious.
What did you tell her?
The truth. That the bipartisan commission has issued me a classified report that I am still digesting.
Wise answer.
Reese, less than a handful of people in government know that the virus was Marburg variant U and that it was an intentional bioweapon attack against the country.
I know, sir.
I lied to the American people in my address and I didn't bat an eye.
You did what you had to in order to prevent a war with Iran. A bioweapon attack means retaliation in kind, which in this case means the nuclear option.
I'd be the first president since Truman to use the nuclear weapons against an adversary.
Ironic that Truman also put the eradication measures in place that almost led to the destruction of Richardson and Aurora.
Some things are best handled quietly.
Ah, yes. The third option, the president said, taking a sip of whiskey as he recalled the motto of the CIA's Special Activities Center.
You know why I lied, Reese?
To avert a nuclear war.
Partially. But I really lied for Jen.
Sir?
I thought of that day. September 11th. Seeing the planes hit, running through the streets, digging through the rubble. Thinking that I'd find her alive under each slab of debris.
Reese remained silent.
There was never any hope. I guess deep down I knew it. In weighing my options in response to Iran, I thought of all the Jens in Iran. All those young men and women just starting their lives with hope of a better future. I wanted her life to mean more than further deaths. They still have it, you know.
What's that, sir?
Hope.
We had a saying in the teams, hope is not a course of action.
Cynical, but true. We also know who gave the final go-ahead in Portland, Maine on September 10th.
And he's now at the bottom of the Atlantic. Reese said.
Yes. That was the shot across the bow to let the Iranians know we are willing to use any means necessary to protect the homeland.
Just like with Yamamoto, Reese observed.
Correct. Though the downing of his aircraft was the prologue to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, my goal is to avoid that outcome.
Yes, sir. Iran waited 20 years after 9/11 to hit us again. They use their long-term deep penetration agents on a mission that kills them off in the process. Had that facilitation network been killed following September 11th, we would have pieced it together, but no one would notice when they are among the thousands killed 2 decades later by a virus or FAE.
A part of me respects their ingenuity, the president said. They learn from their successes and failures. We seem to repeat ours.
They've been studying us since the 1953 coup, Reese confirmed. Their success using proxies in Lebanon in the 80s got them the results they desired. Up until 9/11, we gave them no indication that we were serious about defeating terrorism at the source. And then we handed them our playbook. They've watched us on the field in Iraq and Afghanistan. They adapted and applied those lessons to their battle plans. Then they watched us take a knee with COVID-19 and the civil unrest that followed in its wake.
A house divided against itself cannot stand, the president said.
Lincoln was right, Reese said. The enemy recognized that and hit us while we were down.
There is still a lot of work to do, Reese.
I know, sir.
What about the remainder of names on your list?
The president paused.
With malice toward none, with charity for all.
Lincoln's second inaugural, Reese said, with firmness in the right.
We can all evolve, Commander.
FBI has them back under 24/7 surveillance, electronic and physical. If they are contacted, we will know it. Maybe we can use them to prevent more Gens from dying.
I think that is a prudent move, Mr. President.
And not being a complete idealist, the intelligence you and Dr. Haley Garrett provided gave me leverage. We can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that Iran planned and executed the bioattack. The Iranian president is scared shitless. He knows that we've confirmed their role in 9/11, assisting al-Qaeda with materials and a support network in the United States, and that, if it were ever to go public, I would have no choice but to retaliate in a way that sends them back to the Stone Age. NATO, the UN, the international community could do nothing to intervene. That leverage has allowed us to send in U.S. and U.N. inspectors to oversee the dismantling of the Iranian nuclear bio and chemical weapons programs. There is nothing they can't access.
I've been following along. Rumor has it you might be a candidate for the Nobel Peace Prize.
So I've heard. I'm no Lincoln, Reese. My heart still has the capacity for malice. I'll do what I can to not get caught.
We can't have an American captured on the ground in Iran.
Don't worry about that, Reese said, visions of the bullet-ridden bodies of his wife and child imprinted on his mind. Maybe he'd see them sooner than anticipated.
Do you feel comfortable with the intelligence? With the plan?
I do, sir. I was part of a team that studied the target area back in 2004. A DIA analyst had pinpointed Abu Musab al-Zarqawi in the same location. He was in Iran, and we had him dead to rights.
Why didn't we hit him? The president asked.
They don't tell you that sort of thing at the tactical level, sir. All we knew was that the insurgency in Iraq was gaining headway and we were losing control. Al-Zarqawi had emerged as the leader of AQI, al-Qaeda in Iraq, and the DIA had cracked the code on the enemy's Thuraya sat phone network. I remember seeing a highway of lights from Baghdad through Tehran and up to Chalice on the Iranian coast.
Lights?
Satphone pings. The analysts told us it was like a resort town for terrorists, a place where they could get a little R&R on the shores of the Caspian Sea before crossing back over the border to kill more Americans. Respite from killing the infidels and Jews, we were told.
What was the plan back then?
To drop into the Caspian, go over the beach, and raid the house. We had Kurdish dissidents run by the CIA confirming our technical intel from the Satphone network. He was there, and we were ready to take him off the board.
But somebody pulled the plug?
That's right. Maybe the president or SecDef, somebody high up the chain, didn't want SEALs killing a terrorist 80 miles from Tehran.
Imagine if you had. The insurgency might have looked a lot different.
Perhaps, Reese said, thinking of all his friends who had been killed over the intervening years as the United States continued to bog down in the cradle of civilization.
Okay, then.
Get it done, then come home and marry that girl.
Sir?
Katie, Your girlfriend who is waiting on you at Hawthorne Cabin, the president reminded his guest.
Well, maybe, sir. I need to figure a few things out, he said, thinking about the note and safe deposit box he'd found in the weapons case in the back of the old Wagoneer. His father's message from the grave.
Well, don't take too long, Reese. She might not wait forever. Trust me. Life is about what you two have together.
Reese took another sip of the smooth brown liquid and looked at the president. He'd aged since their first meeting. The gray in his hair was more pronounced, as were the creases around his eyes and across his brow.
I know, the president said, reading Reese's mind. This office puts some years on you.
Sir, before I go, I have a request.
Oh?
I need you to sign an executive notification for the elimination of Nizar Khatan.
Christensen looked into his drink and back to Reese.
He took a shot at the Russian president in Odessa, and he killed my friend Freddie Strain, the man who saved President Grimes. It's personal for me. I want it to be professional for the rest of the country's intelligence apparatus. I want this to become priority number one until he's dead.
I see. I knew you would, Reese said. He's a terrorist, which puts it under the purview of the 2001 authorization for the use of military force. It's legal, as long as you deem him a clear and present danger to the United States. He was part of an assassination attempt on your predecessor. That should be enough.
The president considered it for a moment.
It will be done.
Something else. I don't want a hellfire from a UAV to take him out on his way to the mosque, and I don't want a Delta or Damn Neck squadron paying him a visit in the middle of the night. I just want him found. Leave the rest to me.
The president studied the man before him. It wasn't long ago that he was asking the same thing of Reese in this very room.
Since we are in the business of asking for favors tonight, Christensen said, I have one of my own.
Reese nodded as the president reached behind his neck and removed a necklace with a simple platinum band on it.
This was Jen's wedding ring, he said solemnly. We picked them out together before she died. When I got out of the hospital, I put it on this chain. I've worn it every day since.
Do me a favor. When you kill him, leave it with the man responsible for her death.
Reese took the burnished gray band and examined it. He remembered sliding a similar ring onto Lauren's finger on their wedding day, lifting the veil and looking into her soft blue eyes.
It's inscribed with your name, Reese observed.
It is. Mine had her name inscribed inside the band, and hers had mine.
Reese put it in his pocket, stood, and extended his hand.
It will be done, Reese said, before exiting into the crisp winter night.
Chapter 77. Chalus, Iran. Jafar al-Sadiq sat on a stool in front of a spigot that protruded from the wall on the second level of a house overlooking the Caspian. He began the ritual cleansing of Wadu to prepare for Salat al-Isha by washing his right hand and then his left, each one carefully purified in accordance with the second pillar of Islam. It was closing in on midnight. He leaned forward and brought a handful of water to his mouth, spitting it back into the sink to remove any impurities. He remembered going through the same ritual the morning of October 23, 1983. He cupped another handful and inhaled the cold smell before cleaning his face, starting at his forehead and scrubbing down to his chin, making a special effort to clean his ears. The sleeves of his white robe were pushed up past his elbows, and he took time to scrub his forearms, first his right, and then his left. He then slicked back what remained of a full head of graying hair. He was sure to once again wipe down inside and around his ears. He then brought his right foot to the spigot and washed it carefully three times before switching to his left. Finally, he reached down to pick up a toothbrush. One could not be too careful. The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, had looked favorably upon him all these years.
The Islamic ritual did more than purify his body. It gave him time to prepare his mind for prayer. He had been thinking of the early days with greater frequency lately, something he attributed to advancing age. Tonight, he remembered the first blow against the invaders, watching the cloud form over the U.S. Marine Corps barracks in Beirut as he stood next to Imad Mughniyeh. They had been young men that October day. It was hard to believe Mughniyeh had been gone for more than a decade. His presence and influence still felt within the ranks of Hezbollah, even after the Israeli pigs, with help from their American CIA masters, had killed him in Damascus. How this latest attack had failed remained a mystery. Still, he had put more than 5,000 Americans in the grave. It could have been so many more.